You're listening to the Culture Night podcast, produced in association with the Podcast Studios and supported by the Arts Council.
Brick Palace, building the city markets. Oranges, tench, carrots, herring, pears. So we're walking up Dublin's Capel Street, and about halfway along, we take a left-hand turn down Mary's Lane towards Church Street. Walking along the street, we get our first glimpse of the city fruit and vegetable markets, a red brick and granite temple front, bridging the corner of Iron Street East and Mary's Lane. Coming closer to the market, more of the architectural details begin to emerge. We see large, heavy doors filled with curls of wrought iron, illuminated by touches of gold or brass, flaming lanterns, a granite-edged arch decorated with a carved stone face. A long red brick facade stretches along the lane, 15 round-headed arches with patterned red and yellow brickwork in busy, varied schemes, the deep red terracotta tiles with swirling foliage, more iron, more brick. Continuing on along the street, about halfway down, the bays break and make room for an imposing entrance. Four tall granite columns with acanthus leaf capitals, matching square pilasters sink into the brickwork behind. On either side of this grandeur, two smaller person-sized doors are decorated with terracotta swags, festoons of apples, pears and foliage. Looking up towards the sky, and supported by the ornate stone entablature, we see two sculptures of female figures. They rest against the city coat of arms and motto, Obedientia civium urbis felicitas. The obedience of the citizens produces a happy city. This building, planned through the penultimate decade of the 19th century and officially opened to traders and buyers in December 1892, is a palace of brick, iron, clay and stone. Although it now lies idle, waiting for the next chapter in its 128-year history to begin, this building and the materials it is made from tell the story of late 19th century Dublin and speak to Ireland's place in the world at that time. Whether you're sitting far from the Dublin streets or walking the circumference of the Market Hall, this audio tour will guide you through the building's architectural history and into the crowded, bustling city it was made to serve. Cucumber, sole, Napa cabbage, mackerel, onions. When it first opened, this market hall was known as the City Fish and Vegetable Market. Championed by the Dublin City engineer Park Neville and completed under his successor Spencer Harty, the idea of raising a new market building had been discussed for several decades, especially after an 1853 report highlighted the city's lack of suitable market spaces. The area, lying to the northwest of the city, had long been associated with the market and provision trade. The Ormond Market had operated in the same vicinity from the 1670s, and Pill Lane, now Chancery Street, was a key route of entry and egress for the city. Other markets around Smithfield and Capel Street included an egg and poultry market, a potato market, and an existing fish market. 19th century maps for the parish of St. Michael's show a warren of streets and lanes, many now subsumed into wider roads and buildings. Mary's Abbey, Mary's Lane, Boot Lane, Bull Lane, Fisher's Lane, Greek Street, Dalton's Row, Dawson Markets, Mead Row, Petticoat Lane. These names speak to professions, trades and places. Had you walked down Little Mary Street in 1862 towards Petticoat Lane, you would have encountered hatters, pawnbrokers and provision dealers. Passing Anglesey Road, a clothes broker, a tea and coffee dealer, a wine and spirit merchant, boot and shoemakers, herring merchants, coopers, marine stores, livery stables, coal and coke yards filled the lanes surrounding the market site, a list occasionally interrupted by tenements, ruins and building ground. The area earmarked for the new market may not have been prosperous, but it was rich in small businesses and housing of some kind for the people that ran them. Park Neville was appointed Dublin's first city engineer in 1851 and served in that role until his death. A civil engineer, architect and land surveyor, Neville came from a family of engineers responsible for works and surveys across Ireland. When he was appointed Dublin City Surveyor in 1828, Neville was the third in his family to hold the role, following in the footsteps of his father and grandfather. Trained as a surveyor under his father, as an engineer with the British railway pioneer Charles Blacker Vigneault, and as an architect with William Farrell, Neville brought a unique skill set to his roles in Dublin Corporation. His projects for improving Ireland's capital city were not always glamorous or decorative. He prioritised street cleansing systems, public toilets, sewerage and waterworks. These concentrated on improving life in Dublin through public works, fully in keeping with the practical and useful ideals of the Victorian era. By the time of Neville's death in 1886, the plans for the new market were largely in place. His successor, Emmanuel Spencer Harty, had been part of the city engineer staff since 1862. Harty made some modifications to Neville's design, however, both men were guided by the principles of their age. Across Europe, market halls had emerged as a new kind of public space. They brought order to the streetscape, bringing vendors into an enclosed area in regulated stalls or bays. They enabled better hygiene practices through the availability of running water and drainage, and using new building materials created an architectural set piece that could be a source of civic pride and identity. Indeed, shortly before his death, Neville had been touring new markets in Britain, gathering information on how this architectural type could be refined, presumably with the intention of revising or improving his plans for the new vegetable and fish market in Dublin. The development of the new market hall was closely tied to the idea of health and sanitation. A report published in the Irish Times in June 1889 noted that in addition to the benefits the market would bring to wholesalers and retailers, the works would improve the sanitation of the whole closely populated locality. As they wrote, "From a sanitary point of view, the construction of the markets will effect one of the greatest improvements ever carried out in the city, among these being the creation of an airspace in the centre of one of the poorest and most unhealthy portions of Dublin." In the paper's view, the market would improve the health of Smithfield citizens through its sanitary facilities, employment and the availability of good food. Turning around the corner onto St Michael Street, we see salmon, celery, rhubarb, cabbage, Brussels sprouts. The market hall is rectangular in its plan and encompasses a space of around 6,000 square feet. It is bordered to the north by Mary's Lane and bounded on either side by Arran Street East and St Michael Street, with Chancery Street running along its southern edge. In addition to the hipped entrance at the northwest corner where we began, there are 10 further carriage entrances to the hall, as well as 6 pedestrian doorways. The north elevation that we've walked along spans 15 bays and 24 stretch down towards the river. Although there's no street frontage on the east side, that is on Arran Street, a glance down a narrow cobbled alley reveals the red brick screen wall with a curved gable end and a carriage archway surrounded by red brick. The first task that faced the Dublin Corporation Market Construction Committee was the clearing of the site. To fund this, they applied for and received a loan of £65,000, of which £42,000 was earmarked for buying out existing interests. Converted into today's money, this comes in at just under €6 million. There were several legal challenges which delayed the project. The generations of verbal agreements between stallholders, leaseholders, rent and rolls collectors needed to be untangled. Once the site was clear, the building of the new market hall could begin in earnest, and several key figures were appointed by Harty and his committee. After a tendering process, the contract to build the new hall was awarded to William Connolly & Sons, a building firm with premises on nearby Dominic Street. The firm was well established by this date and had been involved in the construction of ecclesiastical and railway buildings across the city and county. The tender for building the market hall was valued at £14,700. A further tender for the ironwork was awarded to Mr. John Lycett at a cost of £4,359. The clerk of works was Charles O'Toole, and a further range of engineers, craftsmen, were employed to erect and provide materials for the new building. John Lycett, the successful bidder for the internal iron structure, was the head of a steel and ironworks based in Bristol and Wolverhampton, England. His firm, John Lycett and Son, had swiftly expanded from small beginnings in the 1850s to become one of the main suppliers of constructional ironwork in Britain and around the world, with exports reaching as far as Australia. Lycett did have an Irish connection, being born in Mallow, County Cork in 1832. After being sent to school in Bristol in his teens, Lycett remained in England to train as a civil engineer and developed his business from there. From Mallow and Bristol to Wolverhampton and Melbourne, Lycett's career speaks to the history of an industrious Irish diaspora, embedded in the networks of material trade which spanned the globe in the 19th century, connecting Ireland to the wider world. For the new Dublin Market Hall, the Lycett firm provided arches and roof trusses, with each of the slender columns repeating the Corinthian capital seen on the exterior of the building with its mass of acanthus leaves. Over eight gables, which run east-west, these columns supported one of the building's most innovative and important features, a sawtooth roof, with either side of the triangular point holding glass for light and ventilation, or tile to provide shade throughout the day. Zinc louvers placed along the roofline could be opened to increase air circulation through the building as needed. The market hall floor was divided into an 8x9 grid, creating stalls and areas for traders. The ground was laid in concrete and asphalt with granite curbing. A slope on either side led to gullies supplied with clean water, drawn from another of Neville and Hardy's projects, the Vartry Water Scheme, to cleanse away daily detritus. While the interior is certainly less decorative than the outside, some coloured glazed brickwork was used to create a dado, with bands of white, navy and sky blue. On its completion in 1892, artificial light was provided by gas, but all of the interior fittings were wired for electricity. In every respect, the new marketplace was clean, well-aired and ordered. Pineapple, leeks, eels, tomatoes, plaice. Returning to the exterior of building, we see in some of the external ornamentation a greater focus on local materials and craftsmen. The red and yellow brick was sourced from Dublin Brickworks, most likely those at Portmarnock and Harold's Cross. The granite and limestone used for the pilasters and columns came from various quarries around the country, such as Ballinasloe, Ballynockan and Tullamore. The decorative wrought ironwork found over the large oak doors and placed as grills in the tympanum of every second arch was made by J. McLaughlin and Son, located at 48 Brunswick Street, now Pierce Street. Another firm also based on Great Brunswick Street was responsible for the decorative stonework, including the city arms and the two statues to either side of it. Representing fair trade and justice, these were made by the firm of Charles W. Harrison and Sons, a busy decorative practice working in stone, marble and wood to create statuary, chimney pieces, tombstones, pulpits and other church decoration. Harrison and Sons likely also made the granite keystone heads, adorned with produce and fish found atop the carriageway entrances. It is also possible that they designed the pattern for the building's crowning feature, the decorative terracotta tiles that cover much of the exterior and the ornamental corbels depicting the produce sold within the market walls. Peaches, lobster, potato, turnip, lemons. During the second half of the 19th century, there was a boon of interest in the possibilities of terracotta as a building material. It could be moulded into highly decorative patterns while also being relatively cheap to produce. The production of prefabricated terracotta panels was closely tied to the advances of industrialisation, with works often co-located with coal fields and other brickworks. The terracotta for the city fish and vegetable markets came from Ruabon, Wales, and from the company of Henry Dennis. An engineer by training and involved with various railway and mining industries during his lifetime, Dennis founded the Ruabon Red Works in 1867, using the locality's Etruria marl clay to create ridge tiles, chimney pots and ornamental terracotta. Two forms of Ruabon terracotta are found on the market building. Prefabricated mouldings of swirling acanthus leaves surrounding a central berry are set in groups of four over the arched bays, while freeform corbels showing fish, fruits and vegetables are dotted along the north and west facades. While some artistic license has been taken in the depiction of several fish, the fruit and vegetables, along with lobster and some eels, are all instantly identifiable. The range of fresh produce depicts both Irish-grown vegetables, potatoes, leeks and onions, for example, and those which would have been imported from around the world, such as citrus fruits, peaches, and that most beloved delicacy of the Victorian age, the pineapple. Contemporary market reports, published in the Daily Press, tell something about where Dubliners' food came from. For example, in December 1889, the Irish Times noted that Irish-grown grapes were scarce, but that while demand was modest, foreign fruits were pretty plentiful. Barrels of American apples sold for between 17 and 25 shillings, casks of Dutch apples for 42 to 60 shillings. There were oranges from Valencia, Almira grapes, lemons and pineapples, as well as the more prosaic celery, turnips and cabbages. On the same day at the fish market, retailers and shoppers could get cod, haddock and lobsters, all landed at Howth that morning. With this marriage of form and purpose, through its exterior decoration and internal trade, the design of the new market building provided a much-needed space that was both practical and beautiful. Wholesale and retail traders began using the new market building in autumn 1892, shortly before its official opening on the 6th of December. It was a day of civic fanfare. The building was officially opened by the Lord Mayor and attended by the architect, builders and craftsmen, as well as officials from the market committee. The occasion is now recorded in two bronze plaques, placed above the main entrances on Mary's Lane and St. Michael Street. The press reported that the building was both a convenience and an ornament to the city, and the Lord Mayor proclaimed that they were second to none in the empire. The layout and size of the internal structure was praised, along with the facilities provided for those who worked there, including a kitchen and lavatories for both men and women. A ceremonial key commissioned by Connolly from a Dublin silversmith was presented to the Lord Mayor on behalf of the building firm. In his speech, Connolly asked the Mayor and Council to look upon the building as one of the most important public works carried out by the corporation. From that date, the market served as an important wholesale and retail hub for fish, fruit and vegetables in the city. In 1894, a now demolished fish market was built across the road on St. Michael Street. The City Fruit and Vegetable Market building remains an important testimony to the vision of Park Neville and Spencer Harty, a much-needed, logical and well-ordered sanitary market space for Dublin that was also decorative and in keeping with the architectural principles of its time. Through its materials and decoration, this building reminds us of the connections between Ireland and the wider world in the late 19th century, and the networks of trade that brought fruit, vegetables, iron and brick to and from these shores. In some ways, it alters the city motto. The provision of a well-ordered civic space provided by the city's leaders improved the happiness of its citizens. On a sunny Dublin day, the rich red terracotta, the red and yellow brick, and the cornucopia of fruit, fish and vegetables are a joy to behold. A brick palace created to serve the citizens of Dublin.